The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
All right, fellas, all right, just act normal, all right? Act normal. Not normal for us, normal like for regular people.
Good day.
Hi.
May I see your license and registration, please?
There you go.
Thank you. Oh, Americans. Welcome to Ontario. Sportsman's paradise.
Isn't it, though?
Would you please get out and step away from the vehicle? Okay. What is wrong with this picture?
No snow tires.
No.
I was, driving on the wrong side of the road. I can explain that. You see, I'm not used to your rules up here, and I was...
That's not it. This writing on the side of your vehicle.
Oh! How did that get those kids at the garage? I just stopped for, like...
Whatever. My concern is the sensibilities of a certain distinct and viable part of Canadian society. Les Québécois.
Huh?
You know, wine drinkers. Pea soup eaters. French Canadians.
Oh, yeah, those guys, sure.
If you wish to avoid prosecution, I would advise that you comply with our language laws, which specifically prescribe that all signs be in both English and French, Canada's two official languages.
Okay.
I do have to fine you. That'll be $1,000 Canadian or 10 American dollars, if you'd prefer.
Oh, no, I'll pay the American there, yeah. There you go, buddy. What do you want, 10? Thank you very much.
There's your receipt.
Thank you.
And now? In French, if you please.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, October 29, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Today's opener from the 1995 movie Canadian Bacon was a humorous, though stark, reminder that Canada was as dystopian then as we'll all learn that it is still today. The image accompanying this week's broadcast was captured from our opening scene, depicting the side of actor John Candy's truck, with written comments like, "You suck, Canada. Canucks eat dog meat. Eat my shorts. USA all the way." So, of course, he's pulled over for failing to display his political commentaries in French, even though he was driving in mostly English-speaking Ontario. Comprendez-vous? Hopefully you will, right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Today we're going to grapple with the question raised in our show opener. Why does Canada suck? Now, U.S. President Donald Trump certainly thinks that Canada sucks, so much so that he has terminated all trade negotiations with Canada, thanks to an anti-Trump ad created and distributed by the Ontario government under the leadership of Ontario's Progressive Conservative Party leader, Doug Ford. What that ad possibly had to do with Ontario politics is a case that would have to be made by the Ford government, given that it was paid for by Ontario taxpayer dollars. And let's not forget that in the very recent hit-and-run provincial election called by Doug Ford at the beginning of this year, His whole provincial campaign was always attacking the Trump tariffs rather than opposing his political rivals in the province. So why he would continue to attack Trump at a time when Ford has his majority government secured for a number of years yet to come is anybody's guess. But the event is symptomatic of a deep, deep malaise in the broader Canadian mosaic, which extends well beyond Ford's incompetence towards the discovery of the tyrannical nature of a nation once associated with freedom and individual rights. So, to kick off with the basic details behind the whole Ford and Trump conflict, among the first to prepare a very concise and contextually informative summary of the whole controversy was Viva Fry's David Freiheit on the very morning of October 24th after Trump made his announcement. Following his analysis on this side of the upcoming bumper, on the return side, we'll be hearing some related reactions from the same day's edition of the Patrick Bet David podcast.
Viva Fry, former Montreal litigator turned current Florida rumbler in Lugano, Switzerland. And the news of the day, for those of you who are waking up in the East, is that Doug Ford, the Premier of Ontario, has managed to squander $75 million on a provincial ad attacking Trump's tariffs by using a clip from Reagan out of context and not in its entirety, and thus twisting the very meaning of the clip. It has enraged Donald Trump so much that he announced on Truth Social that all trade talks with Canada are off, thanks to a premier of a province, Doug Ford. Before we get any further, just enjoy the ad in all its glory. $75 million and now has cost Canada billions because all trade talks with Donald John Trump are off.
When someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. But over the long run, such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. Throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. America's jobs and growth are at stake.
Now, if you think I'm exaggerating or that I must have made a mistake, I thought so as well. I had to go to CTV News. This is what CTV News describes as the cost of that ad, and I'm reading from CTV News. The government of Ontario launched earlier this month a television ad, which is said to have cost 75 million Canadian dollars, about $54 million US, and is expected to run through January on networks including Newsmax, Fox, and NBC. The ad quotes from Reagan's April 25th, 1987, quote, radio address to the nation on free and fair trade. Quote, when someone says, quote, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, end quote, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time, end quote. The ad, which splices together quotes from Reagan's speech, says, quote, then the worst happens, markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. Now, the only problem with that is that the quote itself, taken out of context, ignores the very end of that speech, in which President Reagan was actually imploring the general public to support his ventures to impose specific tariffs, because Congress was apparently going to legislate away the ability for the president to impose tariffs, and his entire call to action was to allow him to apply tariffs when needed, as he thought would be necessary, because the legislation that they were contemplating itself was a form of protectionism that was going to hurt America. The very reason why Reagan put that speech out, and its very essence, was to defend the president's ability to impose tariffs when he believed necessary. And now all poop has hit the fan as Time is reporting. Trump took to Truth Social and said, yeah, all trade talks are off with this country that takes clips out of context, uses speeches without permission to bastardize them from their original meaning, and to interfere with American policy. From Time magazine, Trump announces trade negotiations with Canada, quote, terminated, end quote, over Ontario Reagan ad. President Donald Trump said the U.S. has, quote, terminated, end quote, trade negotiations with Canada over an advertising campaign against tariffs that allegedly misused an audio clip from former President Ronald Reagan. And then we go to the Truth Social Post itself, and it says the Ronald Reagan Foundation has just announced that Canada has fraudulently used an advertisement, which is fake, featuring Ronald Reagan speaking negatively about tariffs. The ad was for $75 million. They only did this to interfere with the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts. Tariffs are very important to the national security and economy of the USA. Based on their egregious behavior, all trade negotiations with Canada are hereby terminated. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President DJT. Now, what's amazing is that when you watch the last 55 seconds, give or take, of Reagan's address to the nation, his speech, it's abundantly clear what he was asking for was to preserve the right of presidents to impose tariffs. Reagan made his observations on tariffs at large, but the very reason of that speech was to defend the ability, the right, the executive authority of the president to impose tariffs when deemed necessary. And what's his face, Doug Ford, takes that out of context in a $75 million ad that he planned on running in the United States. Why isn't this foreign interference? I don't know, but I said it before and I'll say it again. Canada has made itself a national security threat to these United States of America. While it's doing this, it's cozying up with China, thinking China is going to make better economic allies with Canada than the US.
Now, it hasn't always been easy. There are those in the Congress, just as there were back in the 30s, who want to go for the quick political advantage, who risk America's prosperity for the sake of a short-term appeal to some special interest group, who forget that more than 5 million American jobs are directly tied to the foreign export business and additional millions are tied to imports. Well, I've never forgotten those jobs, and on trade issues, by and large, we've done well. In certain select cases, like the Japanese semiconductors, we've taken steps to stop unfair practices against American products. But we've still maintained our basic long-term commitment to free trade and economic growth. So, with my meeting with Prime Minister Nakasone and the Venice Economic Summit coming up, it's terribly important not to restrict a president's options in such trade dealings with foreign governments. Unfortunately, some in the Congress are trying to do exactly that. I'll keep you informed on this dangerous legislation because it's just another form of protectionism, and I may need your help to stop it. Remember, America's jobs and growth are at stake. Until next week, thanks for listening, and God bless you.
President Trump is not happy about Canada. Rob, if you want to pull this up. So President Trump tweets about Ronald Reagan Foundation finding out that Canada has fraudulently used an advertisement, which is fake, featuring Ronald Reagan speaking negatively about tariffs. They only did this to interfere with the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court and the other courts. Tariffs are very important to the national security and the economy of U.S., based on their egregious behavior, all trade negotiations with Canada are hereby terminated. Thank you for this attention to the matter, President Donald J. Trump. Tom, thoughts on this?
Well, back in the day, Reagan was a free market thinker, and he made comments about tariffs. Reagan was talking about punching first with tariffs. So listen to what Reagan was saying. People have an idea to protect, and that leads to retaliation, and it leads to trade wars. So what Reagan was talking about is you need to get yourself competitive, and you have to be ready for a global economy. That's what Reagan was saying. Very clearly, he was saying, don't punch first with protectionist tariffs. But what is Trump doing? Canada seems to have a short memory on this. Trump is punching back against companies that have had tariffs and restrictions on the United States for years, decades. And so I think you have to look at both sides of it that way, Pat. That's what I think. You know, hard to pick on Trump when he is punching back and trying to level the playing field. You don't hear Trump using the word protection. You hear Trump using the word unfair. Mm-hmm. It's been unfair for too long. And I'm behind Trump on this one. And I think that this spin that being put on there, look, Doug Ford came out and said things. You've got people in Canada saying things. They're trying to get through, you know, the Trump years and get to the other side. And this was a Bush League move.
Adam,
and
I
love the fact that he hit back so hard.
And what's happening in Canada over the last decade, it's downstream from some of the policies that Trudeau basically implemented and now being sort of reinvigorated by this Carney guy, but no bueno what's going on in Canada.
And apparently, Pat, the Reagan Foundation or the family, they're going to be looking into hopefully going after them because they used the video in a manner that wasn't what he actually said. But what they're trying to do, they're basically trying to discredit Trump and what he's doing with the policy. It's like your neighbor is lying to your face. You don't renegotiate. You close the gate. Good for them, Tom.
Reagan Foundation issued a statement saying the ad misrepresents Reagan's remarks and claims that Ontario's government did not seek nor receive permission to use and edit the remarks.
Bingo. Like, okay, you want to play games? That's how we're going to play.
By the way, I actually like the fact that Reagan Foundation is aligned with President Trump and there is none of this rhino, you know, because there's different factions right now in the party. I am so glad they are aligned on this thing together and going up against them. And by the way, the one thing that was, I voted, one of my top three issues with the president was tariffs. And I hope he comes through with it. And I hope they let him do what he's trying to do with tariffs. Other countries can tax us, but we can't do that to them. Wait a minute, how does that work?
That's a very good question. And during his first term, it's the one that Trump was trying to resolve while visiting Canada in June of 2018. And the observation that Trump was punching back against Canadian tariffs was correct and in keeping with Trump's message while in Canada at that time. In fact, I find it somewhat concerning that no one on the right, at least so far that I've heard, has been addressing Trump's own philosophy about free trade and tariffs, especially after having placed the proper context around the Ronald Reagan speech. You know, the speech that was so egregiously misrepresented by a supposedly conservative Ontario government. The point to be made here is that not only did Donald Trump support the use of tariffs, something being criticized in Trump's case, but that Trump and Reagan were on the same page when it came to free trade itself. In fact, everything we just heard Ronald Reagan describe and explain about his use of tariffs in the context of keeping, quote, the long-term commitment to free trade and economic growth, end quote, could have been said by Donald Trump himself, as it was in June of 2018 when he was in Canada. Now this from a much longer version of his comments that we featured on our own June 21st, 2018 broadcast. Here's a brief reminder of how much Trump echoed the free trade and tariff strategy of Ronald Reagan.
I believe that you raised the idea of a tariff-free G7.
I did. Oh, I did. That's the way it should be. No tariffs, no barriers. That's the way it should be. And no subsidies. I even said no tariffs. In other words, let's say Canada, where we have tremendous tariffs. The United States pays tremendous tariffs on dairy, as an example, 270%. Nobody knows that. We pay nothing. We don't want to pay anything. Why should we pay? We have to, ultimately, that's what you want. You want a tariff-free, you want no barriers, and you want no subsidies, because you have some cases where countries are subsidizing industries, and that's not fair. So you go tariff-free, you go barrier-free, you go subsidy-free. That's the way you learned at the Wharton School of Finance. I mean, that would be the ultimate thing. Now, whether or not that works, but I did suggest it, and people were, I guess they're going to go back to the drawing board and check it out, right? But, in fact, Larry Kudlow is a great expert on this, and he's a total free trader. Would you like to say something, Larry, very quickly? Might be interesting.
One interesting point in terms of the G7 group meeting, I don't know if they're surprised with President Trump's free trade proclamation, but they certainly listened to it, and we had lengthy discussions about that. as the president said, reduce these barriers. In fact, go to zero. Zero tariffs. Zero non-tariff barriers. Zero subsidies. And along the way, we're going to have to clean up the international trading system, about which there was virtual consensus of agreement on that. And that will be a target. And these are the best ways to promote economic growth. We'll all be better at it. We'll all be stronger at it. So I myself was particularly gratified to hear my president talk about free trade.
Of course, when Trump made these statements, Justin Trudeau was then the Prime Minister of Canada, and at the time boldly and virtuously took the position that Canada won't allow itself to get pushed around by Trump. Trudeau was also supported by past Conservative MPs Jason Kenney and John Baird, as well as by, of course, Ontario PC leader Doug Ford. That the Ford government thought it could get away with producing a political ad citing a Ronald Reagan quote so out of context is telling. Anyone could have checked for the authenticity and context, not the least of which was Donald Trump himself. And Canada's latest incarnation of Trudeau, Mark Carney, is also adding his communist fuel to Canada's fire of socialism, all under the guise of resisting Donald Trump. Canada's fear of free trade stems from a fundamental fact that Canadian politicians prefer controlled trade, controlled production, and regulated consumption, as we'll hear later in the show from Mark Carney himself. The only good thing arising from this whole shameful action by the Ontario government is that it has forced us to once again take a closer look at Canada itself, given that the tariff issue is but one of many. Even so, the whole tariff debate does have a direct connection to how Canada has become an officially racist nation, to the point where it is undertaking to utterly violate and destroy the private property rights of its citizens by legally expropriating private homes for Indigenous occupation. And in a second demonstration of violating private property rights, there's the outrageous actions of the government openly and illegally planning to kill a herd of ostriches at a farm in British Columbia. Now, that story is one we haven't yet looked into on this show, but I gotta tell you, I've been keeping an eye on it over the past several months, and it is completely infuriating every time I hear about the latest developments. So to summarize the situation as briefly as possible, this overview, as it was published by the Canadian Press on October 17th, and I quote, "A decision by the Supreme Court of Canada whether to hear a last-ditch appeal to stop a planned cull of hundreds of ostriches at a British Columbia farm likely won't be made until at least October 30. The owners of Universal Ostrich Farms in Edgewood, BC, are fighting a bid by the Canadian Food Inspection Agency to cull the flock that was hit by an outbreak of avian flu, which the agency says killed 69 birds. Tests were conducted on two of the dead birds and came back positive for H5N1 flu, but the farm's owners have been pushing for the surviving birds to be tested. The farmers say the remaining ostriches show no signs of illness and should not be killed, while the CFIA says ostriches that appear healthy can still spread the disease, including new mutations of the virus. The Supreme Court issued a temporary stay of the cull order and directed that the CFIA take custody of the birds until it decides whether to hear the case by the farm's owners, who have lost a series of lower court decisions," end quote. And that, of course, is just the tip of the iceberg about this story. And it should be pointed out that although something called the Canadian Food Inspection Agency has been put in charge of killing the ostriches in question are neither livestock intended for food consumption, nor are they wild animals. For a variety of contrived reasons, the Canadian government wants these ostriches dead. The police and state authorities have been occupying the farm for several weeks now in a standoff between them and the owners of the farm, along with their support of protesters and certain media members. The government has yet to objectively justify its actions, as demonstrated by the ludicrous argument that healthy ostriches can still spread the disease, including new mutations of the virus. Talk about COVID 2.0. It's beyond outrageous. It's ostriches. To tell us more about these outrageous and ostriches violations of property rights, Canadian correspondent David Craden joined Clayton and Natalie Morris on their October 22nd edition of Redacted.
Well, continuing our ongoing series about how Canada is cooked, the mayor of Richmond, British Columbia, sent out a letter telling thousands of people to, hey, be prepared to vacate their homes because the natives will soon own them. Yeah, you don't own your own home anymore. You need to turn them over to the native population. This is what happens in a liberal country that's collapsing before our eyes. Our next guest says private property means absolutely nothing in Canada any longer, just as free speech is now an endangered species in Canada. David Craden, independent journalist from Ottawa, Canada. David, great to see you. On this idea of home ownership, talk about what is happening. And a lot of Canadian homeowners right now are kind of panicking.
They should be, Clayton. And I've been talking about this for years because Canada has become a race-based society and where there are castes. This very thing that Mahatma Gandhi fought against in India has become the norm for Canada. We have at least a two or three or four caste system in Canada. At the very top are Indigenous peoples who think they can basically claim your backyard if their ancestors occupied it at some time in the last 500 years. That's what it's come down to. This is all based on a decision by the Supreme Court of British Columbia that said the Cowichan Band, which is essentially in the lower mainland of Vancouver today, can take over vast tracts of land in Richmond, BC. And you say, where is Richmond, BC? Well, it's Outer Lane on the west part of Vancouver. This is the richest part of Vancouver. It's very close to the ocean. And vast tracts of land have basically been ceded by the Supreme Court of BC to this band because, oh, their ancestors occupied it 150, 160, 200 years ago. So therefore, they have a right to it today. So this mayor, you know, people are looking at this and saying, oh, you know, what kind of an idiot is. He's actually being quite truthful. He's saying, if wake up, people, the natives own your land. This is what the BC Supreme Court has said. Now, the province of British Columbia has appealed this decision to the Supreme Court of Canada. And how do you think they're going to rule on this? It's a woke Supreme Court, largely appointed by liberals, and they will say, sounds good to me, as long as it's not my backyard. And that's where we're coming. As soon as this goes to the Supreme Court, no tract of land in Canada will be safe from being subsumed or taken over by an Aboriginal First Nations group that says, hey, my ancestors sat there at one time. It's mine now. I don't care if you paid taxes on that property. But the chaos here is incredible because there's not a single nation on the face of the earth that can't say at one time somebody else claimed that land that right. said it was mine. We have to live in the present, not the past. And Canada likes to consider itself a polite nation of government-serving people. We are one of the most racist nations on the earth because we say if you're a First Nations person, you have special status in this country and you can basically get what you want and you can take what you want because of your ethnicity and your race. I have spent my whole career saying Canada should be a nation of equality under the law. People in Richmond are being denied their property rights because of so-called Aboriginal entitlement, which really should not be worth the page it's printed on, because it should not be legal. It should not be legal under the law. We should be equal under the law, but this country no longer exists as a country. And what kills me, Clayton, every time you go to a Rotary Club meeting, you go to a local municipal government meeting, or you go to a committee meeting at the House of Commons, which I routinely have gone to over the years. Before the meeting begins, they do what is called a land acknowledgement. And they say, this meeting is occurring on the unceded lands of this particular First Nations band or tribe. And I always say, what the hell does that mean?
It's an ignorance about the truth of North American tribes, that they were, you know, that they continuously displaced one another.
Right.
I mean, that's ignorance.
The Cherokees at war with, I mean, yeah, there's no one area. They're like, this was our, this specific spot. We're warring constantly. And who was here before the Native Americans, by the way? Like, God.
Well, that's what I have to laugh at, Clayton and Natalie, because the law firm that's representing the Cowichan First Nations band admits that in their letter. They say that it was, this is land that was contested and basically occupied by the Cowichan tribe through war and intimidation. And I'm saying, well, what the hell do you think the British Empire did? It was the same process, except they were the last people to do it.
Tyranny in action right now with the Ostrich Farm. Blake Roberts, who you've interviewed, he was tearful when he was on your show, really in tears about what the government is doing there. So can you walk us through this video here?
What's happening here is that, and this is from October 1st, and I talked to people at the farm today, and I said, why did you wait 3 weeks to get this video out? I mean, you should have put this video out a long time ago, because this demonstrates the collusion between the CFI, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and the RCMP. They're working closely together. Why are these people producing so much garbage every day? And there are trucks like this going out of the farm every day. How in the hell do you produce that much garbage? Unless perhaps you're killing an ostrich or two every day, or perhaps more. Now, we have no concrete evidence that they are killing ostriches. We've heard reports of dart guns going off. They are not allowing anybody to count the ostriches. And ironically, there was a First Nations group that the government of Canada says they love so much, but they were not allowed to count the number of ostriches. But what's happening here is the RCMP is literally unloading a dumpster from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and doing it in a very unsafe manner. And this sort of crap is going on every day. And my first question is, why is the RCMP suddenly dumping trash? This is supposed to be Canada's finest police agency. And here's the kicker. They dump it here, and this is a site they have occupied, like they've occupied the farm and the adjacent farm. Then they move the garbage to a local business, and then the local business brings it to a landfill site. This is a gravel pit that the RCMP have taken over. Like Edgewood, BC, where this farm is created, is literally like a little police state in Canada. And it's horrendous what's going on here, because this farm has been put through every conceivable device from this carny Marxist government. And they continue to suffer every day with crap like this that's going on. And what is going on with the RCMP? And here's, you know, you talk about moving trash from one area to another to a third place. The trash that's moved from this gravel pit, we just saw, this is a gravel pit about 5-10 miles away from the ostrich farm. Then they move it to another location, and the trash receives a police escort to go to the next location. I got an email last night from a guy who watches my show every day, and he said, this is incredible. These people are getting away with this, and it's just like we're getting snippets of news. We're getting a little bit of information at a time, and they're laughing at us. This deep state terrorist criminal organization, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, has become a paramilitary force to terrorize Canadian farmers. And believe me, if we have a law in Canada to outlaw free speech on the internet,
that will be the first thing to go, because this is exactly what the CFIA has become in Canada. It is a horrible organization that exists not to protect the health of Canadians, or certainly not the health of animals. It exists only to massacre and slaughter large numbers of chickens, perhaps ostriches, and everything else in their way, because they are not following the orders of Canada. Even the Canadian government, they're following the orders of the World Health Organization, and then they're bending those rules. In the end, they're following the rules they make up for themselves. They have their own agenda, and it's absolutely frightening. This has become an organization not just off the rails, not just rogue, but incredibly evil.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And incredibly evil is an understatement. RFK Jr. has twice offered to take the ostriches to the U.S., but the Canadian government is hell-bent on slaughtering these healthy animals, which, as I mentioned earlier, were never intended for food consumption. These ostriches are not livestock, nor are they wild animals. They have a status that is clearly distinct, as defined by their owners, whose very relationship as owners is being utterly violated by Canada's criminal authorities. The owners had a personal relationship with these ostriches, giving them individual names and otherwise treating them as quote-unquote pets, and as an opportunity to study the species for learning and for display to the public. The whole situation reminded me about Peanut the Squirrel, remember that? Peanut the Squirrel was a pet eastern gray squirrel that had an Instagram account devoted to it with over 500,000 followers. In October 2024, the squirrel was taken, along with a pet raccoon named Fred, from its owners in New York, in Pine City, New York, by the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And the animals were later euthanized to test for rabies. And of course, both animals were perfectly healthy and demonstrated to be so on the owner's Instagram account. My argument was then, and continues to be now, that once human beings have established a personal relationship with an animal in the sense of treating it as a pet, then that animal's legal status should be quite different from that of being a wild animal or simply livestock. And that is why, as well, the controversy over eating the cats and eating the dogs, remember that one a while back? That became a clash of cultures, since in Western cultures, cats and dogs are considered domesticated companion animals, not livestock or wildlife of the type that are acceptable to eat. But the weirdest thing about this whole ostrich situation may have occurred when Rebel Media's Ezra Levant connected the ostrich issue to Canada's trade negotiations with the United States. Give a listen to this.
Ezra Levant here. I'm in Calgary, city of my birth, and I think it's the freest city in Canada. And so when I heard that there was going to be a federal provincial health ministers meeting here, I managed to get credentialed. Myself and Sidney Fizard, our videographer. And so I sat in the press conference, and there was not one, but like a dozen health ministers, including the federal health minister herself. So I put a couple of questions, including one to Marjorie Michel, the new health minister. So anyways, I got up and I asked a fun question about the ostrich farm. And I was stunned by the answer. Here, take a look for yourself. I have a question about the ostrich farm. Now, don't worry, I'm not going to ask about the lawsuit because I don't want you to talk about anything that are before the courts. But there was a letter, and I notice in the statement you talk about Canada-U.S. cooperation. I know that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., your U.S. counterpart, has written saying he thinks that there's some medical research value in these ostriches because they had avian flu, but then have recovered and are now immune. In fact, he's offered to do the research and even to pay for it. It seems to me that we need allies around Trump's cabinet table. And if you could throw him a bone and say, sure, Secretary Kennedy, you can study these birds. It's sort of no skin off Canada's nose. And don't you think it would be helpful to have an ally in Trump's cabinet when we're doing our trade negotiations?
Prochaine question, merci.
That's my question. Don't you think it would be helpful to have a friend?
Next reporter, merci.
Oh, you're not going to answer, Minister?
Prochaine question. Merci.
I don't understand. Did I do something wrong?
Next question. Thank you.
Minister, did I miss an answer? I don't get it. Okay, I'll sit down. I guess it's question period, not answer period.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, indeed. That guy must have just fallen off John Candy's bilingual protest truck. Is it any wonder that Canadians cannot trust their government anymore? Just one more reason why Canada sucks. And David Craden's earlier observation that Canada has become a race-based society is something with which we are quite familiar. As we concluded on our own December 18, 2024 show entitled Canada's Dystopian Derangement, From Race to Russians, quote, for all its claims to the contrary, Canada has become an explicitly racist, sexist, and fascist state, made so by decades of political corruption that was never addressed or rectified, end quote. And, as I personally concluded way back in 1993, following an Ontario human rights case in which I successfully defended a London, Ontario landlord falsely accused of racism, quote, the lesson to be learned is that white people must exercise great caution when associating with individuals of a different skin color. This is a distasteful thing to have to admit, but there's simply no avoiding the reality that that's how things are in Ontario. The Human Rights Commission is a blatantly racist organization. It regards all members of visible minorities as being weak, vulnerable, and intrinsically inferior to whites, and proceeds to enact legislation based on that racist belief, end quote. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the racist reality of Canada. Quote, Canada is one of the most racist nations on earth. Canada should be a nation of equality under the law, end quote. So says David Craden in repeating what we've been saying on this show since its inception. And kudos to Natalie, who pointed to the fact that competing Indian tribes continuously displaced one another. They were warring constantly. Now, I remember when I myself got into some hot water for raising that very issue. As a representative of the Provincially Registered Freedom Party of Ontario, I addressed an all-party federal commission discussing Aboriginal and First Nations land rights. The minute I mentioned the history of various Native tribes emigrating from what is today, say, the New York region into the Southern Ontario region, I was instructed that this information was not permissible and could not be considered by the panel. Talk about rewriting history, something that apparently Canadian politicians do regularly to justify their unjustifiable policies and positions, which are generally racist in nature. And for Canadians, things are only getting worse. 2 days after David Craden appeared on Redacted, John Carpe of the Justice Center for Constitution Freedom also appeared on the show, this time warning about Canada sliding into a full-on police state, 1984 Orwellian style, which we will hear a part of on this side of our upcoming bumper. And on the return side, Canada Pauly refutes Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney's rewriting of Canadian history, proving Carney to be nothing short of a liar.
Well, Canada, get ready to be a full-on police state, 1984 style, if Parliament passes a few bills we're going to alert you to. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom is warning specifically about bills C2, C8, and C9. I'm going to summarize them together and then we'll break them down. If they are passed, they would allow the government to open your mail, criminalize the use of cash, allow for warrantless search, prosecute Canadians for opinions, kick you off the internet, have full access to your social media data by allowing social media companies to basically become an arm of the government, allow your neighbor to report you for possible hate crimes so that the government literally can put you on house arrest for the potential, that's like Minority Report, for the potential to do a hate crime if they just don't like the way you use the internet or your opinions. Joining us to discuss is John Carpe. He's the president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedom. He's also the author of Corrupted by Fear, How the Charter Was Betrayed and What Canadians Can Do About It. So thank you for joining us. Can you sort of give us an overarching warning about these, and then we'll talk about it little by little? There was someone in the chat saying, I'm from Canada and you're wrong. They didn't say how. So tell us what's the fact.
Well, we're not as bad as the United Kingdom, where, as you know, there were over 12,000 arrests of people for what they said on social media, making comments against immigration policy. We're not there yet, but we are poised to take that leap. If all of this legislation gets through, so the bills C2, C8, C9, they're all in second reading before the House of Commons. And the House of Commons is sitting for quite a few more weeks before Christmas. So there's ample opportunity. So the things that you mentioned are accurate. If all three bills pass in their current form, it will be illegal to use cash in amounts 10,000 or more. Canada Post will have the authority to open letter mail without a warrant. The government will be able to order it to kick individual Canadians off the internet by ordering a telecommunications service provider, so some company that provides your internet or provides your phone. They can order that company to kick an individual off phone and off internet. And also there's going to be a lot more prosecutions for hate speech, even though they can't really define hate because it's an emotion and it's subjective. But right. If these three bills pass, we're going to be close to a police state. We'll certainly be at the mercy of the government in terms of how bad they want to make it for us.
So what is the justification that they would use in this Combating Hate Act?
The pretext is always safety and security. You know, politicians never take away your rights and freedoms without offering a nice sounding pretext. And so the Canadian government's very good at messaging, well, we want to protect you from hate. We want to protect you from hate speech. We want to protect you from misinformation, from disinformation. So therefore, you've got to give up your freedom of expression and you have to let us regulate and control the internet. We already have a bill that was passed 2 years ago that empowers the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission, which is a federal national regulatory body, to monitor websites and podcasts for Canadian content. They haven't yet taken actions to start defining it and imposing it, but it's there on the books. And so the pretext is to keep you safe, protect you. And so therefore, you know, we're going to ban hate speech by empowering police and prosecutors to lock up people who say things that police and prosecutors feel might be hateful.
Cardi is rewriting history, and not in a historic leadership kind of way. He's not rewriting history like Trump's rewriting history. He's rewriting history like talking about Canadian history in a way that is just false and like provably false. So, meh, whatever. Weird, but whatever. So that's interesting. But yesterday evening, Mark Carney did a campaign kicking off style speech, except he's going on a trip to Asia for like 9 days. But the stump speech was boring. Alex says national addresses should be reserved for emergency purposes, not for an opportunistic photo op before leaving town. Mark Carney says, our plan to build Canada strong 6 months after I won election and haven't done anything since. Cool, right? Bureaucracies, you like bureaucracies? We've added some bureaucracy to your bureaucracy. It's like he's on Pimp My Ride. CBC Watcher says the Carney economic agenda is a long and emerging list of interventions in the belief that the state is the entrepreneurial control of economic activity. If the state is there, it's not capitalism. Free market creative destruction is being replaced. Free market creative destruction is Ford stops offering things that people want, like electric Ford F-150s, and another company rises because Ford falls. And then that creative destruction, this company is offering, you know, something that would compete with a Ford F-350, but it's the same price as, you know, a little Honda Civic or something like that. That kind of creative destruction is being disallowed because the state is involved and the state subsidizes all these things that nobody wants. And this leads to car graveyards and things like that, right? So it's not being allowed. And I just wanted you to understand what free market creative destruction is, because it's kind of important to this. That's being replaced by status destructive creationism. Federal intervention plans seem to expand almost daily. Industry Minister Mel Joly told Financial Times of London last weekend that Ottawa has plans to ride a wave of economic nationalism and somehow cajole Canada's $3 trillion in pension systems to invest more in Canada, a move Paul Beaudry, former deputy governor of the Bank of Canada, said was very dangerous and risked creating a type of crony capitalism. Canada exists because of crony capitalism. That's the only thing we do. This part of the speech is where everyone in Canada is screwed. He can use the Indigenous to blame projects from never being started, and he will tax companies and businesses who don't conform to his ideological green emissions free utopia. There's no such thing as being more competitive if you become a green company. That is made up nonsense to make him and his globalist friends rich. They want everything tied to carbon, and we are one of the test countries. So here's just a minute and a bit of Carney. Here we go.
Now, it's not just what we build, it's also how we build. We will build inclusively in full partnership with Indigenous peoples, First Nations, Inuit, and Métis every step of the way. We will build in solidarity with workers, creating good union jobs. And Budget 2025 will introduce our climate competitiveness strategy. With a focus on results over objectives, on investments over prohibition, we will build sustainably. Le budget va contenir une nouvelle stratégie.
The budget will contain a new strategy to build sustainably and competitively for Canada's future. We will focus on results
objective
rather than targets. We will focus on investment rather than prohibitions. We will build sustainably by focusing on energy, transportation, homes, and low emission manufacturing to strengthen our competitiveness. Because reducing greenhouse gas emissions is not only a moral duty, it is also an economic imperative.
We recognize that in today's global economy, we have to build sustainably. It's not just a moral duty, it's also an economic imperative. It is a moral duty, but it's an economic imperative. Now, above all, we will build Canadian. The new security threats the world is bringing to our shores means we're making the biggest investments in our military.
He spent a lot of time talking about how the relationship with the Americans has changed and we can't rely on the Americans. And he really put a fine point on that and tried to sell the idea that we can move our economic activity from the United States to Europe or anything like that. And the green stuff was a big part of the speech as well. Ryan is responding to this. He says, any politician who ties our economic prosperity to climate change is a criminal, in my opinion. They are complicit in our continued downfall and destruction of our quality of life. Climate change is a hoax. It is designed to take your money. And if we allow the politicians to use it as an excuse to tax us and as an excuse for bad policies, then more fool us. Carney says, oh, look at how much good we've done in the last 6 months. Nope. Absolute lies. Nothing is true from this man's mouth. Here is Jasmine, and she says, Prime Minister Carney says Canada's public square is fragmented by online echo chambers. And he says the world is a dangerous, more dangerous place, and, you know, we're on our own and all sorts of other nonsense.
Our public square is fragmented by online echo chambers, where truth and fiction can be hard to tell apart, and where contrasting ideas tend to polarize, not persuade.
I would like to persuade you to read deeply about any story you're interested in. Don't take my word for it, right? And this guy's talking about polarizing people, but he drives wedges. Polarizing people means, you know, pushing people apart, but he drives wedges to push people apart.
In the context of all this, as Canadians, we have relearned some key lessons over the course of the past year. First, we have to take care of ourselves because we can't rely on one foreign partner.
That one foreign partner we have a better deal with than anybody else. And if that one foreign partner pulled the rug on us, we'd be economically destitute. Cat Canada says, long before Confederation, our country was forged by Indigenous peoples. Nope, this is reimagining history. Canada was not a cohesive country when European settlers came and settled it and built the country we live in now. And it was a collaborative effort. And the First Nation tribes ceded their land. And if you don't believe that, well, you need to read some history, because history belies your belief. Here's Carney talking, reimagining history. We should not listen to liars, right? And I show this to you because he's a liar and he's lying. He's using the apparatus of the state, a broadcast to all of Canada, to lie to you, to reimagine the truth, to reimagine history. This is not appropriate for a prime minister.
Long before Confederation, our country was forged by Indigenous peoples. Coureur de Bois and voyageurs who mapped this continent and built vast trading networks from coast to coast to coast before the Americans had even left St. Louis.
Nope. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Just totally reimagining history.
In addressing John Carpe's observation that we already have the CRTC to monitor websites and podcasts for Canadian content, I always wondered how that might be applied to Just Right. It sure stopped us from airing a lot of content when we were broadcasting out of CHRW-FM radio in London. But today, the only thing quote-unquote Canadian about this show are me and Robert Vaughn. Beyond that, our website is located in the United States, and our two shortwave broadcasting stations are located in the state of Maine and in the country of Germany. If nothing else, I'm sure that today's broadcast might qualify as Canadian content based on the topics discussed. So, consider the irony. Canada exists because of crony capitalism, says Canada Poly. But there is no such thing as crony capitalism. I get his point. The proper definition of capitalism excludes any so-called crony relationships with government. Crony capitalism is a contradiction in terms. It's an anti-concept created to destroy the concept of capitalism. Crony communism or socialism is more like it, which of course are better known as fascism, and all crony politics emanates from the left. For evidence, just listen to Mark Carney. What a pile of verbal garbage we constantly hear from that guy. Carney's word salad is certainly consistent in one regard, because it always includes the same ingredients. Build inclusively, partnership with Indigenous people, solidarity with workers, climate competitiveness, build sustainable, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, build Canadian, etc., etc., and all BS and lies. But in light of planned state controls of speech, perhaps the most disturbing words coming from Carney's mouth were, where truth and fiction are hard to tell apart, and where contrasting ideas tend to polarize. What a ridiculous statement. Contrasting ideas don't tend to polarize, they are polarized. That's why they're called contrasting ideas. Polarization in politics is a fact. That's what politics is about. Beware of anyone trying to protect you from political polarization. As Ayn Rand warned in her very first published essay, Volume 1, Number 1 of the Ayn Rand Letter, titled Credibility and Polarization, quote, "When polarization is used as a pejorative, this means that men should not differ in their views, ideas, goals, and values, that such differences are evil, that men must not disagree. In the absence of intellectual polarization, we are witnessing the growth of the ugliest kind of divisiveness, or existential polarization, if you will, pressure group warfare. The country is splitting into dozens of blind, deaf, but screaming camps, each drawn together not by loyalty to an idea, but by the accident of race, age, sex, religious creed, or the frantic whim of a given moment. Not by values held in common, but by a common hatred of some other group. Not by choice, but by terror." End quote. And that was written in 1971. So between them, it appears that both Ontario's Doug Ford and Canada's Mark Carney have so polarized Canada's trade relationship with the United States that they got exactly what they wanted. An end to the polarization, along with the inability to disagree with or negotiate with Donald Trump. I'm sure had they ever appeared on an episode of The Apprentice, Donald Trump would have told them exactly what he did over Ford's fake ad. you're fired. And with that thought in mind, here's hoping that you are all fired up enough to make it a point to join us again next week, when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
No, I think, no, this will interest you. Do you remember the guy that used to host The Apprentice? Remember the guy? I don't know if you ever watched the show. He used to be on The Apprentice. He had like a, well, if you, I don't know if you've seen his new show. It's called The News. And it's quite something. If you like cliffhangers and what the fuck moments. So, yeah.